Welcome to DACOM Digital, the Digital Asset Compliance and Market Integrity Podcast. Solidus Labs hosts conversations with the builders, movers, and shakers of a safe and regulated crypto and DeFi industry.
Welcome, everyone. Thank you for joining us today for this DACOM Digital episode, where we're going into the ins and outs of the Bitcoin Spot ETF approval a little more than a week ago. We have a remarkable group here. Leaders that really made it happen. I feel like if there's ever going to be a movie about the Bitcoin ETF being approved, these guys are going to have characters for them. My suggestion for Andrew, at least, is Ryan Gosling. we'll let Hollywood decide that when the time is right. Just to briefly introduce our speakers here, Andrew Jacobson is the VP of Legal Globally for 21 Shares, which I believe was first in line and actually named on the approval notice. 21 Shares, of course, work with ARK Invest, a pretty legendary firm by now. Tom Stout is with us. He's the president and chief operating officer. And of course, Eleanor Terrett, a journalist at Fox Business, who really has been deep in covering and providing insights on what's going on, what was going on at the SEC and across the industry. So let me start by asking a pretty straightforward question. What was different now? What changed that allowed for it to finally be approved? I'll just say that from our vantage point, Solidus were very focused on market surveillance, market integrity. Market manipulation has been consistently for almost 10 years now, a major challenge that the SEC has used to reject Bitcoin spot ETF rule change applications. There were a lot of attempts to address it over time, et cetera. But this time, it's finally, and there's been a lot of changes to how the applications work. So what actually changed? What got the SEC to finally approve this? And if it's okay, Andrew, maybe I'll start with you. Give us a little bit of a chronology and analysis of what was different about this round of applications.
Sure. Happy to, Chen, and really happy to be here. I think this round of applications is really, or this round of approvals is really inevitable. If you look back at filings dating back 10 years, our first filing was in June of 2021, and we were actually last rejected in January of last year. And so if you look at in terms of the process, I think the Grayscale decision, yes, did have impact. It put the SEC in a legal bind. But I think just more broadly from a macro level, you look at the maturity of the industry. You look at some of the research that our research team prepared in coordination with ARK and our filing, really showing that it was a mature market, that it was a much safer market than it was maybe 10 years ago. I think it put the SEC into a corner politically, put them into a corner from a regulatory perspective, and really put them into a corner from a product perspective, that this was the right time. And so, people point to court decisions, they point to other factors. I think it was really, really, really a number of different ones that helped get this one across the finish line.
No, thank you for that. And, I think I've read over the years every single rejection document. I'm a bit obsessed with this. I'm probably not the only one, but I think it's a pretty limited club. manipulation has been very central to it. But it also is something that exists in traditional finance. I'm kind of curious to ask you, Tom, from your vantage point. You guys, of course, ARK has been extremely innovative in terms of your ETF products, actively managed, et cetera, really took it to a whole other level. What's your perspective, I guess? Was this similar to other processes, different? And again, what changed?
Yeah, I think it certainly has been different. I think that's fair to say. I echo a lot of what Andrew just said, both in terms of the fact that I think both ARK and 21 Shares are pretty proud that it was actually our filing that actually set the timetable that eventually led to this approval. It was the milestone on the timeline for the ARK 21 Shares Bitcoin ETF that is the reason that it was January versus, perhaps dragging on at least a little bit farther. We certainly stand on the shoulders of quite a bit of work for a decade, as Andrew said, but it's not just that. I think you look at the fact that other markets have had these products. You talk about market, concerns around manipulation. You talk about concerns about deviation or issues. We look at, and I can tell you from the ARK side, when we were entering the partnership with 21 Shares, we spent quite a bit of time looking at their performance of products in Europe. It was the only firm in this Bitcoin race in the United States that had a proven track record and an auditable track record, where I could spend time and look through actual operational execution. And that gave me great comfort in putting our firm's name alongside another's to bring this product to market, go through the process, and of course, the more important part, which is start to handle client money. But I think it's also, you look at regulatory regimes and financial markets that the US, you know, wants to be associated with. You look at Europe, you look at Australia, you look at Canada, you know, there are others as well. These products have been trading well. There have not been significant issues. There have not been massive dislocations. I think when Andrew says it's inevitable, we looked even in the US with, you know, the performance of futures products to show that it could be done. And what we've all come to the same conclusion is that compared to where US investors were forced to gain exposure and being driven offshore and driven into some of these, you know, unfortunate events, those could have been prevented if the regulatory schema here would have acted faster. And, you know, that's a hindsight argument, but it's also a consumer protection argument. The SEC is, at the end of the day, not an investment advisor. It is a consumer protector. And I think the overwhelming evidence became clear that U.S. investors, whether they're retail, whether they're institutional, whether they are large or small, are better off under the ETF structure. They're better off with auditors and regulators and firms that have something to lose. And I think that what you're seeing is that this is obviously the first stages here with the launch of the spot Bitcoin ETFs. But there's a lot more that comes after this. I don't want people to see this as the end of the journey. This is really just the beginning.
Right. Well, you're stealing some of my questions, which is great. We're already getting into it. And I think maybe just to kind of, to echo your point, I believe Commissioner Peirce, who has been on the dissent side for half a decade now, basically referred to the past 10 years as wasted time, which I think, kind of reflects what you did. And on that note, Eleanor, I think few people at this point really know what was going on at the SEC. And I think of those people, I mean, you definitely have been able to provide a lot of insight on what's the process been, on the regulator side and obviously with broader in the industry. So I'm curious to ask you from your vantage point, what changed, what happened, what allowed this to finally be approved? What switched?
Well, I think the gentleman made excellent points as well. For me, covering the SEC, covering sort of the regulatory saga that has been cryptocurrency versus the government for, I'd say, I guess for the last 5 or 6 years, but particularly ramped up in the last 2 years. I think the Gensler-led SEC, it still has the same attitude towards cryptocurrency and Bitcoin as it pretty much always has. And I think we saw that proof with Gensler's statement regarding the approval right after, you know, it came out on the same day. He basically said, we're not endorsing Bitcoin. We're not endorsing what it does. We still believe it's a vehicle for illicit activity. But legally, he didn't actually say this, but the takeaway was that legally, we can't put up any more roadblocks for investors who actually want this. And Tom mentioned the disclosures. The SEC, at the end of the day, their job is not to regulate by enforcement, right? It's just something that they do. And it's something that they've been doing to the crypto industry for a long time. They're a disclosures-based regime. So they're the ones that say, you know, they're basically the gatekeepers. They say, has this company given their investors the right disclosures? Do they know everything that's going on? And if they do, then an investor, a retail investor, a sophisticated investor, if you want to call an accredited investor, right? U.S. investors have the opportunity to invest in what they want. And I think at the end of the day, it was very much the Grayscale case helped. Andrew mentioned the maturation of the cryptocurrency market. I think that also helps a lot. But also, it just ended up being that Gary couldn't really say no anymore. And he also had the sort of the ire of the courts, you know, looking over his shoulder as well. But I think the main thing that's changed to your question, Hen, is that the staff attorneys as well, I think the attitude has changed surrounding the cryptocurrency market. I think we've seen a total shift in the view that this is not just some niche industry that's kind of, you know, off in no man's land. And it's actually something that actually it's a $1.7 trillion industry, right? That's nothing to sniff at. And And it's been very much front and center in some of these court cases we've seen between, you know, whether it's Ripple, whether it's Coinbase, whether it's Binance that's going on today. But also just the technology, blockchain technology and crypto. I think SEC staff attorneys and you guys, Tom and Andrew, you can tell me if I'm incorrect here, but I believe some of those staff attorneys, they understand crypto at least a little bit better than they did 5 or 6 years ago. Right. And it's become much more of a popular alternative form of investment for retail investors, specifically after the pandemic. And there's actual conversations now going on surrounding cryptocurrency in Congress, in the White House, in all these places that 5 or 6 years ago there really wasn't. So I think it was kind of a perfect storm of things. It was the right place at the right time. You know, whether it was 10 years too late, I'm sure the crypto industry does think that is the case. And I'd say it also helps when you've got Larry Fink on your side.
I mean, I think, you know, one thing I wanted to just add to that is, you know, in the U.S. here, we have, you know, a division of government such that to create checks and balances when one strays past their delegated authority. And I think, you know, people have certainly referenced the judiciary, you know, obviously delivering rulings against the SEC as part of the executive branch, you know, and effectively creating that environment where they were out of nose, I think, you know, is the way that was said. And of course, the legislature now as the third branch is certainly getting, you know, is finally spending more time talking about it. We're seeing more educated lawmakers as well. But one thing is, I've heard some say that the fact that a court case was required, it, you know, cheapened this in some way, shape, or form. And I disagree with that, but in part because I think it's easy to forget, Canada got listed Bitcoin ETF products because of a court ruling as well. It was 3IQ up in Canada that ultimately had to go to the court system against their regulator to get the listed closed-end funds first, and ultimately that led to open-end ETFs. But it was, you know, obviously, you know, there are some differences between the regulatory schema, but it didn't cheapen the outcome. In fact, right, if anything, it reinforced and I think gave confidence that this is the purpose of the regulator versus where the lines are. And as such, the regulators have an important role to play, but they are not the investment advisors. And you know, we saw sort of a replay of that in the United States. It's easy to forget, though, that that's just what it was. It was a replay in terms of the court ultimately making, you know, the final push over the finish line, not unique to the United States at all.
Well, that's a really good point. And I knew it, but I forgot it. So it's such an important reminder. You know, I try to remind folks in the industry, because we all get very frustrated about, you know, how slowly regulators act sometimes and about enforcement, that there is, you know, litigation is a form of dialogue between the industry and regulators. It is sometimes a way of moving forward. It's obviously not the ideal way. And we all have our issues with regulation by enforcement. But to your point, Tom, you know, it is a really important reminder that sometimes this is how things should work, this balancing act. And you know what, before we jump kind of to the impact and where this is taking the industry, I want to geek out for 1 second on a very kind of specific legal point, which, you know, to me connects to this question of, could this have been approved earlier or not? And that is specifically in the later part of last year. Some of the most kind of exciting moments in the development of the applications had to do with the introduction of a shared surveillance agreement with a crypto market. It was, you know, something that obviously was very interesting for us as a company that specializes in crypto market surveillance. But it was also something that the SEC in a way has asked for in some of the notes earlier on, basically saying that if there was a shared surveillance agreement, essentially an information sharing agreement between a large enough crypto section of the crypto market and the listing exchanges, it could have made a difference. What was interesting for me is that the ultimate approval actually did not even reference that shared surveillance agreement. You know, it is public that the shared surveillance agreement is with Coinbase. We know that there is a legal process between Coinbase and the SEC taking place right now. But I'm curious to ask you guys, what are your thoughts on that? Because ultimately, the actual approval boiled down, and correct me if I'm wrong, Andrew, to an independent study that the SEC did that basically confirmed that there was enough correlation between the Bitcoin futures market and the spot market, instead of using the shared surveillance agreement that has been signed. So curious for your thoughts on that. You know, what does it mean that it was included and ultimately not mentioned in the approval? Or you know, am I misrepresenting it? Maybe Andrew, I'll start with you.
Yeah, happy to. The SEC in the approval order actually cited our research, which we had prepared for, you know, we've had it in our filings for some time now, and we updated it, which really showed that the spot and futures markets were sufficiently correlated, so much so that, you know, the court found this too, but, you know, 99.99% tied together.
That's an argument that you've been making for a while.
For a long time, and others have made it as well. We're not the only ones to, you know, this shared surveillance agreement, you know, in my view, was not necessary. I mean, at the end of the day, the crypto markets are the most transparent markets that exist. Anybody can go hire software, including Solidus Labs, to tell what is happening in the market, where is it happening, and try to dig into that. You don't necessarily need sharing of information between a national securities exchange and an underlying crypto market, et cetera. And so I think that ultimately the SEC abandoning that probably was a good sign that it wasn't necessary for them to get to their conclusion that this was a regulated market of significant size to therefore warrant, you know, approval. The one thing I want to note, just kind of not to go back, but to note about this market is that, you know, there is a proven track record of this market existing, as Tom said, as Elner said, overseas. Our first product was over 5 years ago. That's an eternity in crypto years. And so, you know, there's a proven track record for these to exist and not to be complete vehicles for manipulation, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I actually would argue that these ETFs make the market a little bit more efficient than they necessarily were for the underlying. It's a much more mature market than it would have been if people are just trading on spot.
Thank you, Andrew. I guess I'll ask before I move on if any, do you, Eleanor or Tom, has any other comment on could it have been approved earlier? I feel like we have consensus that it could, but I don't know if you have anything else to add on that point.
I mean, it certainly could. I think we'll continue to see evolutions, though, in the product, right? I think, you know, much was made of the cash create versus in kind. You know, there are other aspects, surveillance agreements. You know, this is something that we've seen in the ETF space, though, you know, in general. We saw, you know, ARC's been around long enough to where we needed to get our own exemptive relief as an individual firm just to launch actively managed ETFs. And at a certain point, the rules were completely rewritten with 6C11 in the United States, or colloquially known, you know, the ETF rule, and the rules changed. The products were made better. Regulations were simplified, standardized. You know, the end investor doesn't always notice these things behind the scenes. And just like Andrew was saying, you know, sometimes regulators think something is very necessary that turns out, you know, is proven not to. And with other ETFs, you know, INAVs on equity ETFs were, you know, a huge topic of conversation as pricing indicators. And then it turns out that the market was pretty clear that it that wasn't really how it was being priced. But so I think that you're likely to see iterations and evolutions continue. I think there are things behind the scenes that regulators and industry participants will want, need, change. I wouldn't be surprised if we see the create and redeem process continue to evolve. That's natural, though. That's healthy. The conversation around surveillance agreements, I think, was part of the journey that got us here. I agree with Andrew's view relative to whether they were really a requirement or whether they were a red herring or whether they were helpful. But it's all part of that, you know, process, the education process. And I think you said it right, you know, a couple minutes ago. The regulators know an awful lot more about this now than they did. Forget the industry. Like, we've all been working on this. We've been in the weeds. You know, Eleanor and journalists who have been paying attention have known a lot about this for years. But the regulators have a lot on their plate. They've gotten a lot smarter. And as they've gotten smarter, things that mattered before don't matter now. New things will continue to come up that matter that, you know, aren't being looked at today. And that's the sign of a healthy, dynamic industry. Even if the end consumer, the end owner of these ETFs, doesn't really feel that much of a difference.
Yeah, you know, I at least couldn't agree more. And I guess, Ellie, maybe turning to you, first of all, if you have any additional thoughts on could it have been approved earlier or not, but also maybe let's start talking about how has it been? It's been approved. What's the impact? Has it been successful? Obviously, there's been a lot of debate and discourse around it since it was approved. So I guess if you have anything to add on the earlier question, and other than that, we look like since it's improved.
Something I want to bring up that you and I mentioned briefly when we were talking about this question, and is the notion that Coinbase itself is still in litigation with the SEC. We had the hearing last week, the motion to dismiss. Coinbase asked a judge to drop the case, and the SEC said, nope, we don't want to drop this. It is totally warranted. So we've obviously got a big case where future regulations could potentially hinge on the outcome. And you mentioned something interesting to me. I mean, with the shared surveillance partnership with Coinbase, you said that they didn't reference it specifically. They made a big fuss about it for a while, and then it actually wasn't mentioned in the approvals. And could that be because they don't want to admit that Coinbase, who they're currently suing, is a regulated market of significant size? So just, you know, could be another way of looking at it. You know, the SEC doesn't want to give too much, I guess, too much kudos to Coinbase, even though we talk about ETF winners, right? Who was the biggest winner? Was it BlackRock? Was it ARK? Was it Bitwise? But everybody seems to come to the consensus that it was really Coinbase, because they got to partner with so many of these issuers in this project. So I think it definitely could have been approved earlier, and watching interviews with Hester Peirce over the last couple of weeks, she's said as much. And she said, it shouldn't matter what we think, like, you know, because we always ask her, I guess, journalists, media, we always ask, do you think Bitcoin is a commodity? Do you think Ethereum is a commodity or a security? I think the consensus now is that Bitcoin is indeed a commodity. But how do you see Ethereum? Is it a security? Will that have any bearing on potentially a approval of a Ethereum spot ETF? And she's like, it shouldn't matter what we as commissioners think. Like, it should matter what the market wants, and we should listen to what the market wants and actually do more of the legwork when it comes to participating in regulation, participating with people who want to provide these products in a safe and regulated way. And I think for a long time, it really was crypto and just the industry was so marginalized, and it's still being vilified by people like Elizabeth Warren and Jamie Dimon. I think we're going to continue to see that. But yeah, I think we've all come to the agreement that it probably could have been approved earlier. But like I said before, it seemed to be really just the perfect storm when it was approved last week or the week before. So, and for what it means for the industry, I mean, just from a journalistic point of view, as someone who's been covering it and someone who actually works at a TradFi media company, as it were, it's brought more visibility to the space. I mean, I started covering crypto in 2021 off the back of the SEC versus Ripple lawsuit. That's how I really got interested in the space. And I felt like back then it was just me and my boss, Charlie, covering crypto. We would cover prices, Bitcoin moves, Ethereum moves on the network, just in terms of, you know, how it looks from an investor standpoint. If you put $10 in Bitcoin 10 years ago, then how much would you have today, kind of thing. But there was no real conversation around, is this a serious industry? I think because there was that sort of, people thought it was a bit of a joke. Like, I know I went on an NFT space kind of recently, and I just remember, like, everybody asking me about NFTs, like people at work, people who aren't in this industry, just being like, aren't NFTs just like pictures of toilets that are worth a lot of money? So there are a lot of misconceptions, I do feel, around the space in general. And I think those are starting to be flushed out as the space gets more understood, as it's more integrated into the TradFi system with the birth of these ETFs, with the knowledgeable staff, like you mentioned, Tom, the industry is just bringing so much education. I do feel like we're seeing companies like Coinbase start initiatives, right, where they're lobbying the Hill. They're saying in the right way this time, not in the way that Sam Bankman-Fried did it, but we're saying, you know, we are not Sam Bankman-Fried. We are here as honest people who want this honest money mechanism to work. And I think that really is having an impact. And just the integration has been noticeable, at least from covering it the way I do.
Now, the one interesting point on that, of course, is every time we talk about the regulator and Congress is that we're, you know, about 11 months away from another inauguration day. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this SEC, you know, regardless of which party wins, this SEC may or may not look the same in terms of some of its, you know, leadership and key personnel, and also, you know, what is important as a part of the executive branch. There are a growing, increasingly educated congressmen, but the entire House of Representatives is up for re-election again, and some of the Senate. So, you know, every time that we start to play politics here, or politics gets intertwined, including from the regulatory standpoint, you know, this effectively was approved in the last year of a presidential administration. You know, one that may continue, may not continue. And it's not the first year. It's quite possible that even from the regulatory front, you know, we have more questions that could be tailwinds or headwinds ahead should, you know, any of the central cast of characters here change in the coming, you know, year.
Yeah, it's definitely in an election year. I think, you know, the kind of prospects for more clarity are you know, kind of hard to expect. But it can also bring a very, very different next year. I think it's a really important point. And there is a lot. I mean, it's pretty unfortunate that it's become, to a large degree, a very partisan issue. But there is a lot of interest on, you know, Capitol Hill, and I'm sure you guys all spent time there as well.
I mean, to your last question, right? And the last thing I would say on that is, you know, certainly Chair Gensler has gotten quite a few arrows on this topic, you know, and I think, you know, certainly has been in this chair for the 3 years, certainly the 3 years that we've had filings. But the filings on this topic are 10 years old, you know, and Chair Clayton before him had opportunities. That was a different political party, and it didn't get approved in that window either. So, you know, I think certainly we do have to keep in mind that while, you know, we have, you know, short-term memory on some of this stuff, and rightfully so, you know, there is a longer story here that spans both parties, different administrations, different leadership at the commission, you know, and we got the same result for quite a while. And that does have to be taken into account, both, as you said, a potential risk moving forward if new players are in the game, but also as an opportunity to engage in that dialogue that we're coming at this now with far more awareness and education. And that's going to have to be right off the bat in really all three parties of government as new players come along, that they're walking into a world now where this exists, not should this exist.
You know, I always try to remind everyone who is willing to listen of Bill Gates's saying in this context that we tend to overestimate what can be done in a year, underestimate what can be done in 10 years. If we really look at the development of the crypto industry from a 5 or 10 year perspective, it's a completely different story sometimes than when we're very focused on what didn't go well right now or last month. But, you know, we have been waiting to hear these terms, Bitcoin, ETF, and approved, you know, in one sentence for a while. We've heard them. I guess let's talk for a second about what it's been looking like since it started trading. Obviously, very, very successful based on the numbers. But let me hear from you. I mean, I guess, Andrew, how's your ETF doing? I guess, what's the sentiment so far?
Tom, you're welcome to give. You probably know the numbers as well as I do. He's doing very well. I think that's pretty clear. I think we're one of the top in terms of volume. I think that our operational and trading infrastructure, which is, you know, the same that's been in place for 5+ years, more than any other issuer, is really proving why that's the case. Our spreads are among the tightest. And so, you know, from my perspective, all the hard work that we did behind the scenes, engaging with the staff at the SEC, preparing our filings, working with, you know, broker dealers and other counterparties is really paying off. And I think that's reflective in how our fund is doing. But yeah, Tom, you're the business guy.
No, I first of all, I think what Andrew just said is really important. You know, around the initial launch, there's going to be a lot of exuberance, and firms have, you know, their certain money line up, whether that's money that they have discretionarily under their, you know, their organization or their, you know, their closely held friends, if you will. But as things get settled down and we look about growing the market, and I think that's what this was ultimately, you know, really about. It was about bringing in segments of the market that have been kept out for so long. And a lot of these segments, when you look at the institutional buyers, when you look at sophisticated advisors and consultants, the intermediated channel, again, really the retail intermediated channel, as well as the institutional intermediated channel, this is really not started yet. You know, for by and large, these buyers are just starting to take a look. They're digesting the numbers we're seeing. And that's where what Andrew just mentioned is going to be critically important. what's your cost of execution? How well is it tracking? What's the market making ability? Remember, these are cash, create, and redeem. You know, how much is that influencing price and performance? What's the overall cost, the all-in cost, as they would say? And of course, from ARKB, for the ARK21 shares ETF, we feel extremely good, to be honest with you, where this is at. I think we've shown that we have the support of the general retail buyer, the direct-to-consumer, do-it-yourself buyer. That's been reflected in the a support base of the volume and the flows in the AUM that, you know, isn't necessarily, you know, one of the big firms liquidating one fund and putting it into another fund and, you know, looking really good. But we also have the support, the quality of the product. And again, I go back to this is where partnering with 21 shares for us and being able to have a demonstrated track record of everything that I'm saying for 5 years gives us great confidence, gives institutions that we're talking to great confidence. You know, to be honest with you, we have had really substantive discussions with public state pension plans, public treasuries, you know, parts of the ecosystem that we never would have associated with this. And they're not looking at allocation sizes of 20%, 15%. Of course they are not. But are they looking at it in the 1%, 0.5%, 2%? You know, they are. They're having active discussions and quality of product, quality of trading, quality of operations, quality of security, and being able to look at a demonstrated and auditable track record of those things is really going to matter to that. So, you know, we know that we have that. We know that not all of them do. I think overall, a lot has been made over the first couple days when I think that really, you know, we're just getting started in terms of what is truly going to reflect these products. And you know, I feel really good that we're, you know, for us on this call here, ARK and 21 shares is the combination and it's showing up in the assets, in the flow, in the numbers. We're the only combination that has a fully crypto native firm and an ETF TradFi firm, if you will, although we're certainly on the bleeding edge of TradFi, you know, and has the distribution and capabilities in partnership. We have a partnership with Resolute Investment Managers to support that intermediated channel. That's not to say speak ill of any of the other competitors in the race. There's some extremely fine firms, and which speaks a ton of Bitcoin. It speaks a ton of the opportunity. But I feel really, really confident where our offering and all of the ancillary pieces of that, you know, comes to market. And I think the performance here through the first week plus really highlights that when we're going up against, you know, much, much bigger firms and more than holding our own.
It's definitely an exciting playing field out there. It's been fun to follow. So we know we talked a little about. I mean, you guys provide a lot of insight into a little bit how institutions, what response you're getting from institutions, you know, from the traditional financial industry. I'm curious, obviously, Eleanor, if you have anything to add, but also a little bit, what's been the response from the crypto industry? A lot of, I think, disappointment on the Bitcoin price not necessarily skyrocketing. Is obviously one thing that's kind of dominated the conversation, but what are you hearing? What are you seeing? What are your thoughts?
I just want to add quickly to Tom's point, just from my own reporting. A couple of weeks ago, this was I think a week before the approvals, we got that advisor survey from Bitwise, and I believe it was 88% of advisors were waiting for the potential at that point approval of a Bitcoin spot ETF in order to start really kind of taking this thing seriously and letting their clients know about it. And I think Tom also mentioned that, you know, it's pretty early, right? We've seen some really good inflows. We've seen some really good volume in the last week or so. But a lot of advisors, and I've, you know, having conversations with issuers, a lot of advisors they've been speaking to don't know about this yet, or they're just kind of now understanding that it's a thing. And I think that just shows that, I guess in crypto speak, right, we're early. So there's a lot of future interest that will eventually flow into these things. So I think that's a really encouraging conversation that I had with someone last week. And Hen, remind me your question again. I know you did ask me.
I mean, I was curious, you
what the crypto industry's reaction?
Of all of us here, you're definitely the biggest crypto Twitter star. and just in general are extremely well plugged in. So I'm curious a little bit for your thoughts on what's been the response of the industry.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, et cetera. Yeah. Yep.
Definitely, yeah, a little disappointed in the price, I guess. I don't follow price action charts or anything like that. So but I think the overwhelming sentiment was positive. I think everybody's happy that this industry is really kind of been given, you know, it's been what's the word that Larry Fink used? You know, it's rationalized now. It's been given a platform, right? It's not just this, like I said before, this marginalized industry that, you know, people just put their money in to hopefully get a giant return and then they end up losing all their money. Like, it's not seen as that anymore. It's actually seen as a real alternative form of investing that traditional Americans, I guess, people who typically just put their money in stock market, in bonds, in real estate. It's something concrete that they, if they choose to, can put a certain allocation of money in. And that's been encouraging. I have heard from some, I guess you would say, Bitcoin maxis or crypto maxis that having the Bitcoin ETF go being approved was, you know, they Peter McCormick specifically said this. He wished that the Bitcoin spot ETF hadn't been approved because he still really believes in Satoshi's original message of, you know, everybody owning their own wallet and their own keys and operating their own nodes and having this be very much just still a vehicle for retail investors to have financial freedom. But I think on the other side of that, it is important for the integration because it helps give the space credence and visibility. So I think it's kind of a, I guess you call it a double-edged sword, right? You know, you kind of lose that, like, you know, maybe a little bit of what Satoshi had imagined, but at the same time, you're getting the validity. That's the word Fink used. You're validating this asset that before was maybe just not really taken seriously. So I think that has been sort of the overwhelming majority of the crypto industry seems to be happy about it. And now everybody seems to be, you know, it's Bitcoin spot is already trading. When are we getting Ethereum spot? That's all I keep getting. That's all the questions I keep getting.
Soon.
I was just going to say, we're the front of the line on that filing as well. So we're willing to say soon.
Excellent. Oh, really? Okay.
So
Nothing official.
Like, that's not an official. That's nothing. There's no inside information there. That's, you know, our confidence in our own filing and our own.
But I believe it is public that there are applications.
Yes. And our combination is at the front of the timeline on that. That's also public.
Do you feel confident because of the approval of a Bitcoin spot in the same vein they'll approve the Ethereum spot? Or do you think regulatory uncertainty might stand in the way? Just quickly, what's your take? I'm curious.
You know, I think, and Andrew can weigh in also, but I think what gives us the confidence is that the dialogue with regulators in terms of, in the same way Bitcoin has really matured in terms of the sophistication of the conversations, the education base, you know, the depth at which the conversations were taking place, which, you know, which I think is a little bit of what Andrew's point was in terms of the inevitable. Obviously, this is riding, you know, there's a lot more of a base to build off of, both from legal principle, from execution in the market, just philosophical ABC, and also the infrastructure that, you know, sits underneath and behind this is now not hypothetical. It's on paper and it's operating. So I think that for all of those reasons, you know, some of them legal, some of them operational, some of them philosophical, some of them just purely educated. You know, this is not the same place where we were in the, you know, on the timeline for Bitcoin at this stage.
So it's not going to be another 10 years. That's for sure.
Let's hope not.
Never say never to anything on that. But I think they're much more substantive.
Yeah,
I agree with Tom 100%. I think that it's a totally different ballgame than it was a year ago. The SEC, you know, spent, you know, God knows how many hours, you know, writing comment letters, reading, you know, revisions to our S-1, refining the creation and redemption process. I think the fact that the SEC greenlighted ETH futures helps from a pure, you know, legal perspective. I think there's very little room for them, if any, to reject these legally speaking, and they can do whatever they want. But I think the momentum and the fact that they approve spot Bitcoin is a pretty, pretty strong precedent as it gets. I did want to add one thing to what Eleanor was saying before, but the impact to the crypto industry. You know, I've been doing crypto, you know, blockchain regulatory work for 8 years now, and you know, there is a sentiment And we do other types of work, you know, at our sister companies, you know, in the token space, et cetera. I think there is a sentiment, I feel, that this really elevates everybody. And really, it elevates everyone by expanding access. That's one of the core theses of us. I know ARK also agrees with that. You expand access to certain types of investment strategies. I think this also expands access to the entire blockchain ecosystem. So yes, does this elevate Bitcoin? Fine. Yes, it does. But what about other protocols? What about other native tokens? I think this is a total game changer, complete historical transformative type event where it's going to bring everybody up. It's going to bring other blockchains up. It's going to bring more assets, more interest into the ecosystem. And so, you know, from a decentralization perspective, you know, folks might say, well, you're not holding your tokens, blah, blah, blah. But I think ultimately speaking, this is probably perhaps the most important event that's happened in crypto in a long time.
Because you can hold your tokens if you want. If you want to invest through an exchange, you can totally do that. And if you want to feel a little bit more maybe safe and secure with an ETF, then you have that option too. I guess optionality is the key here.
But I think what's important is that, you know, it's sometimes I 100% agree with that. I don't think it's this binary argument between the two. I think it's sometimes lost that there are segments of the investing population, especially when you get more into the institutionalized space, that have custody rules and requirements. Mm-hmm. And, you know, holding your own is just not an option in the same way that they can't hold gold bars in the office. You know, even if it's locked down the hall, they have to have a custodian, and they can't hold, you know, paper stock certificates just because, there's custody is a very serious topic in the industry. And I think in the crypto debate, it's sometimes put as this binary choice, but it's really not that simple. There's quite a few that just don't have the luxury of availing themselves of custody in the way that the crypto community has been talking. And so custody of the assets in a securitized ETF, you know, opens up this space in a way that it was never opened before. It does lead to benefits, though. There are things that you can do with an ETF that you cannot do with assets, even if you utilized a crypto custodian. I think one of the ones that'll be interesting to watch is even those who have a significant amount of Bitcoin themselves, they can now bring that under the umbrella of their existing banking relationships. And because it's inside there, this is going to be able to be used as collateral and have effectively use it to borrow against in a much more meaningful way. Most banks wouldn't allow straight Bitcoin that's custodied, you know, either at a Coinbase or self-custodied, to be posted as collateral to borrow against. You know, now that it's under the umbrella of our traditional banking system, that's going to open up, entirely new opportunities for those with wealth to borrow against, to create velocity of their own assets. So that's just one example of use cases that now, you know, come to the forefront that we really have not had in a meaningful way. And I think that this oversimplification of A versus B is that. It's an oversimplification. Look, the reality of the situation is for years now, we've been stuck with either you do it yourself or you use, you know, the Grayscale product that was a flawed instrument in an over-the-counter closed end, you know, that was skewing market dynamics. Certainly, I mean, they themselves said it wasn't an optimal vehicle. So, you know, I'm not saying anything that they haven't said themselves. So, you know, this approval of an ETF was more than just Satoshi's vision or not. You know, a lot came in between that made this argument a lot more complicated. And I think also FTX also, you know, opened some eyes that driving certain people into parts of this ecosystem because there are no alternatives is not necessarily a good thing. It doesn't mean it's the elimination of use cases for those parts of the ecosystem. We're not even saying that, you know, as sponsors. But it's about making sure that depending on the use case, you have the tool for the job. And I think ETFs play a critical component to that in the same way that they did for gold, right? A lot more people have access to gold because it's in an ETF. You could always have your own gold bars. You could always have your own gold coins. And yet we see just how much is captured in ETF products. It's because there is a utility and a value added, but it's not either or. It depends on what the unique characteristics of the situation are.
I feel like you're all really touching something that's really dear to my heart, and it's this process that I feel like the crypto industry has been going through, and traditional finance has also been seeing, where we're moving away from this approach to decentralization and decentralized products as a binary. It's either decentralized or not. This is going to replace traditional finance, and we're seeing a spectrumization. And I think the Bitcoin ETF is really an important step forward in showing that it's not about replacing centralized finance. It's about expanding the amount of ways we all will have to engage with finance. We can do it completely on our own. We can do it completely with the help of a bank, and there's a lot of places down the middle.
Bitcoin ETFs cumulatively, so for all providers, are now the second largest commodity traded in ETF form behind only gold, right? It's on day one passed every other commodity that we've been trading in ETF form for years, past silver, past oil, past lumber, past palladium. And so, you know, this is part of your question about Ethereum, quite frankly, is that as digital assets, as an asset class, forget just Bitcoin, but digital assets as an asset class, now starts to get into portfolio allocation, there is an argument to be made that diversification within that allocation is going to only really be available to certain buyers if Ethereum actually gets approved as well. And so, you know, these arguments that we've been talking about in different contexts on this webinar start to merge very quickly when you say, in terms of consumer protection and disclosure, in terms of portfolio allocation for those who need the ETF vehicle and are, due to friction and other limitations, kept out of either using crypto custodians or self-custody, you know, the argument for Ethereum becomes clear even on that path. Right. That, you know, again, we saw how fast this can happen. Even those who are saying that this was a disappointing launch, which I don't agree with, but especially considering how many are still just coming online, you know, most advisors and institutions are not in yet, and we're still the second largest commodity that's in ETF form. Think about both where this can go, but also the need then for diversification once you're now allocating to an asset class. Right. Gold's more powerful because you have silver, even though the investment cases are fundamentally different, but they're both precious metal commodities. The same will be true in digital assets. And of course, we have the right people on the call here. 21 Shares has seen this in Europe. They're well beyond just a Bitcoin or Ethereum. But, you know, in the United States, we're obviously going to be talking about Ethereum as, you know, we're not going to get that far that fast. Yeah. But you can see where the conversation went and the value of that conversation. It raced right through this for those exact reasons.
So, thank you for that. And look, we're getting towards the end of our time. So I'm going to, if it's okay with you, ask for essentially a closing round of remarks, a couple of minutes from each of you. I guess I have two questions. You can decide if you want to address the first one, and, you know, most importantly, the second one. The first one is, can what's been given be taken away? Is it something the industry needs to be worried about, et cetera? Obviously, a lot of you have a lot of is it something the industry needs to be concerned about? The second question is, I guess, what are you focusing on now moving forward? I mean, what's on your mind? We got past this hurdle. Tom, you already said this is not a we made it moment. It's a we're getting there moment. Yeah. So A, can what's been given be taken away? And B, what's biggest on your mind as we move to the next stage? Maybe we'll start with you, Ellie.
Sure. So, I mean, I think I don't see them taking the Bitcoin spot ETF off the market in such concrete terms. I don't, when you say, can it be taken away? I'm not sure, and Tom could probably speak to this, whether that's actually ever happened, if they've actually ever rescinded a certain type of ETF. But I, to your point, like, I think the industry has a long way to go in establishing itself as a more serious industry. I mean, I think the last 10 years has proven that they've definitely taken steps to get there. I think the SEC, Gary Gensler, although his term is up in 2026 and it might be different with a different administration, I think you've got to prove to a lot of skeptical lawmakers as well that this isn't just an industry for money laundering and criminal activity, right? And the crypto industry knows it's not, and many lawmakers knows it's not as well. But I don't think the industry could survive another SBF, FTX-like catastrophe. I think, you know, and I think a lot of the bad actors after that, you know, have been weeded out. I think there's good potential for growth and positive momentum. But I think, you know, as an industry has to be cautious that, you know, it's you know, kind of living up to the expectations that TradFi, I guess, Wall Street, the SEC has given the industry. So just in terms of like, you know, can it be taken away? I guess like the trust could be taken away. But, you know, I don't foresee that happening, hopefully. And then your second question was, what am I working on? What am I looking at? Personally, it'll be following the deadline guides for the new deadlines for the Ethereum spot ETFs. Also looking at potential movement in those bills in Congress this year. I know it's kind of a long shot because it's an election year. Might not be too much movement, but I've heard that the House members are looking to put some new components into their crypto market structure bill, the Fit for the 21st Century Act. That actually would have to clear the House and then go to the Senate, go to the president's desk. So we saw that leave committee last summer, the House committee, House Financial Services Committee. Now it would have to go to a full House vote, but I think they're incorporating some new terminology, ideas in the wake of everything that's happened with the ETFs and kind of a little bit more maybe concrete regulation surrounding Bitcoin. So definitely looking at that stuff. And then also I'm really interested in the SEC hack. I'm really interested to see if we're going to see anything, maybe come to a conclusion on what happened and who was involved and why they chose this particular day to go rogue, I guess. So that'll be, I think, as we get hearings and hopefully Gary Gensler will be able to address that in a hearing. Maybe hear from some staff members as well, just to exactly what happened, because Hester Peirce has been asked about it. Obviously, they can't really talk on the record about it because they're under investigation by the FBI and everything. So it'll be really eye-opening, I think, to kind of see what comes with that. So those are a few things I'm looking forward to.
Well, I'm certain that once there's any news to report on it, you're going to be the first to report them. So I'll definitely be keep on following you. Andrew, how about we move to you? I guess first, can it be taken away? If you want to respond to that at all, and second of all, what's biggest on your plate for the next coming few months?
It cannot be taken away. It's not like candy I give my children, then take away when they've eaten too much of it and get sick. This will not be taken away. The industry has earned this. The industry deserves this. And so I would echo to my fellow colleagues in crypto: this is not a gift. This is what you've earned. This is what you deserve. Right. So no, it will not be taken away. What do I want going forward? I want regulatory clarity. You know, this industry has been doing this for too long. There's too many smart people in it. It's invested too much money in doing things the right way for legislators, for the executive branch, and for regulators as part of the executive branch not to give clarity. So we need clarity. I think then we need to resolve the status of the asset class, resolve the status of the native tokens, of the various protocols. That will promote the technology. The most important thing is the underlying technology. We have to resolve the asset class. That will come with regulatory clarity. And I think lastly, keep pushing the boundaries when it comes to innovation. Ken, your company always says transparency is the best disinfectant.
Well, sunlight. I believe
innovation will bring sunlight. Innovation is key. Keep doing that. Those are my views.
Louis D. Brandeis quote. I went to Brandeis University. It's part of why I like it so much. But no, I agree with you 100%. And I guess, Tom, you get the closing words.
Yeah, you know, I echo a lot of what Ellie and Andrew said. So, you know, I'll leave some of that as said. You know, when you look at the firms that have been that are involved in this, you know, in this launch, these are firms that have a lot to lose. Right. I mean, they have a lot of other base business that they didn't need to get into this race. And yet, so if there were deep seated concerns about this industry, we wouldn't have. None of them would have. Right. I mean, this is not, as you know, as the theme of this entire webinar has been, this is years in the making. These are thousands of hours of work and conversations with regulators and security and operations and trading and markets and exchanges. You know, so I think there should be comfort that, you know, some of this perception that still needs to be shed, you know, think about the firms involved in this. They don't need this. And yet they've chosen this because we believe so deeply that it is better for U.S. investors of all shapes and sizes to have access as a tool in the ETF, where it is regulated and audited and transparent, you know, and where markets, you know, can gain access for everybody rather than just some. in terms of what that means, you know, from my chair moving forward, you know, a lot of, you know, there certainly is always an exuberance around launch. Any ETF you really see, there's a chart that the day one, you know, tends to be really high, and then it, you know, it smooths out down in a, on a curve, you know, to where it settles in and from a AUM and a flows and a volume. We've seen that continue to be much higher here. And I think that that speaks to the enthusiasm and the demand and the interest. But what I'm really excited about is some of the most sophisticated buyers of any asset class are really just starting to take a look. You know, these are people who wanted to see these things trade, see these things price, see these things settle, see the market depth, see the market quality, see the pricing, the spreads, the cost, the commissions, the, you know, premiums and discounts. I feel so confident with the offering we have that I get up every morning excited to talk to, you know, the advisor who's just now able to look at this, or the institution or the consultant who's had to wait, you know, this long time, but even this, you know, this first week. A lot of these organizations can't even look at a product or start to look at a product until it actually exists. You know, so while we had a number of good conversations leading up into this, so many have internal policies and guidelines about hypothetical product discussions, you know, that while they know who we are and we know them, we've probably talked to them about other products over the years. We've probably even talked on a very high level generically about Bitcoin because they were allowed to have that conversation. We haven't even been allowed to start to talk until now. And, you know, these are very smart people who for so long have had an excuse to not think about digital assets as part of their allocation because they couldn't, or they weren't allowed to, or whether it was custody or regulated product or pricing or sponsor, any number of rules. Now, if they are not in Bitcoin, now they made a choice not to be. Whereas before it was just NA, right? It's just not part of the calculus.
Right.
And these are the same asset allocators who are now going to be held accountable if they choose not to be, or accountable for their allocation. And so I think that degree of accountability and responsibility, even if it's going to end up in different asset allocation levels across the different customer segments, is a huge, huge psychological shift, fiduciary shift, attention shift. Because now not allocating is also an explicit decision. And those conversations have been incredibly enlightening on our side. They continue to be incredibly informative and educational. And I'm excited to continue those with some of the smartest money managers, wealth managers, asset managers in the country and beyond. And you know, it's been a long time since people have had a new asset class to talk about that they've been able to get exposed to. And that's what this is. It's a conversation about a new asset class. And that is honestly a hugely exciting a conversation to get up and have every day.
Guys, thank you so much. It's been enlightening to me. Really appreciate you finding the time. And if it's okay with you, I'm going to be waiting for the same conversation we're going to have once the ETH spot ETF is released. Have a wonderful rest of the day, and thank you for sharing your knowledge.
Thanks so much, everyone.
Thank you, guys. Pleasure.
Thank you.
See you soon.